When you think of summer, what comes to mind? Time spent with family, concerts, amusement parks, food that you've waited all year for? Stop daydreaming. The Wisconsin State Fair has 11 days and a million ways to make your day Wonder Fair. It's your chance to see thousands of animals, taste hundreds of foods, experience dozens of twists and turns, and indulge in a cream puff that will knock your socks off. This is the one time of year where calories don't count, but time with your friends and family sure does. The last days of summer with the Wisconsin State Fair. Wisconsin State Fair, presented by U.S. Cellular, August 1st through the 11th.
All right, it's Dave Player back with you here on 720 WGN. So it is that time of year again, one of the iconic events of summer for families across the Midwest, including mine, is just north of the Illinois border, and that is the Wisconsin State Fair. It's celebrating 168 years, 11 days of incredible family fun, which opens this Thursday, August 1st, runs through Sunday, August 11th. The very first Wisconsin State Fair was held in 1851 in Janesville, and over the years, the fair migrated to different towns before finding its permanent home in West Dallas. And joining us to tell about the history of the fair and what you can look forward to, including the return of the 15-story Wonder Wheel Ferris Wheel, the largest in North America, new foods and attractions, is the CEO for the Wisconsin State Fair, and that's my friend Kathleen O'Leary. Hello, Kathleen.
Hello.
I know, you know, I was saying I had to dig around for some reason. I got a new phone, so my contacts aren't always in there. But I look back, and I can't remember, it was 2012, 2013, I found your contact info. We've been doing this a long time together.
You know what? Everything about the fair is steeped in tradition, and you did say that it was the 168th Wisconsin State Fair, and you are correct, 127 in West Dallas. But we have created our own tradition, and yes, we have been doing this. Oh my gosh, almost a decade. That's crazy.
I know. And I've been going. I mean, you know, talk about tradition. So I've been going, I think maybe 42 years. I mean, since I was just a little kid. And as I always tell you, I can walk in through any entrance and you could blindfold me and I can make my way through every food vendor and every element of that park. I mean, it's just such a piece of my family history.
And that is so awesome, and that's what, you know, we hope is exactly what we're trying to achieve with the million-plus people that come to the Wisconsin State Fair, that this is, you know, we create these memories that transcend generations, and you start going as a young kid, and then all of a sudden you get a little old, and now you're going to go with your friends, and then you get into a relationship, and you go with your significant other, and
Very true.
All of a sudden you have kids, and that's the beauty of not only the Wisconsin State Fair, but the fair industry.
But here's something that's really funny, and I always love looking at the history of these things. In like the early 1860s, when you think about this, of course, long before our time, it was canceled due to the Civil War. And when you read stuff like that, it just tells you how long this thing's been around. You want to talk about generations, this is four or five generations deep, you know?
It really is. We've only, in the 168 years, we have had to cancel five times, and they have been due to three times to the war, and then actually to the World's Columbian Exposition that was held in Chicago.
Yeah, that was a big deal back then. Yeah, absolutely.
It was a very big deal. But we just didn't feel that while we were obviously in war that we should be having a state fair, which I totally agree with.
That's right. And Millie's was around since 1932, which is an Italian sausage place that I always see around the fairgrounds. And I can't believe that they've been around that long. And the logo that you guys have used, was it early 1970s, right?
Early 1970s. And it looks like a snowflake to most people. And if you see the logo, it has all these different colors, but it represents everything that we are about in the Wisconsin State Fair with our government, our commerce, our agriculture, our security. So I love when you think about logos, and they should represent something. There should be something there that speaks to why it looks the way that it does. But that's those colors and that snowflake represent, and they're actually upside down W's.
I did not know that. I got to tell my kids that. That's pretty cool. You were talking about agriculture, obviously the backbone of the fair industry, and the Coliseum, which is always a go-to two or three times a day when we're there, and they feature shows each day at the fair, all kinds of different animals, all kinds of different competitions.
Absolutely, that is that. You know, that is where the kids and the youth of, you know, they've worked tirelessly, literally tirelessly, to get to this point. And that blue ribbon means more to them than anyone can imagine. And really, when they do win the scholarships, that's, people don't understand that when they take these premiums home, right? Mm-hmm. They're not just, it's just not dollars. It's scholarships to help them with their education, because they are the youth of our future, not only in the state of Wisconsin, but they're the youth of our future. And they, it's amazing. And yes, the Coliseum is home to the draft horse hitches. If you've not seen a hitch show, again, this is the beauty of the Wisconsin State Fair and the fair industry. It's where rural meets urban. And yeah. I had never seen a six horse hitch show. But when you see these Clydesdales and these Percherons and the Belgians, and they're just gentle giants. And
beautiful.
But what it takes to maneuver and to navigate these hitches is pretty awesome. And sometimes they're 12, 13, 14 years old.
Yeah, we walk and we talk to some of these families that are around as well. And my kids live in the city, and you know, we'll all just get a conversation going with these kids, because the most common thread walking even through the barns is all the kids are on their cell phones while they're doing what they're doing, just like in the city. So there's a good relationship there, you know, a common relationship of communication between them all. But yeah, it's fun to talk to some of these folks, you know, because they're working all year to get to this point.
They have been continually showing at the county levels in order to get to the state fair. And, you know, we do. You see, you know, they might be on their phones, but I'll tell you what, when I'm coming into the fair park some days at 4:30 in the morning, I have three girls, and I can tell you that I don't see my kids up at 4:30 in the morning shearing sheep, you know, washing down their cattle,
walking
their Clydesdales.
No, it's a different
life.
That's
what they're doing. They're preparing to show. They're preparing for their big day.
Absolutely. The other big thing at the fair, and it showcases so much of Wisconsin's foods. And by the way, I mean, we're talking just over the border. I mean, it's like rush hour from Batavia to downtown or vice versa. I mean, this is a pretty short ride to get to this fair. And the big thing for me is food. And I know in my mind some of the traditional things. We talked about Millie's Italian sausage being there since the 1930s. The Lions Club and their corn roast is something we always beeline it to. The pork shop, we can get a great fresh pork sandwich. Sheboygan or Usinger's Brats, Brad and Harry's cheese curds, maple root beer, the cream puffs. And is it the 95th anniversary of the cream puff this year for Wisconsin?
It is the 95th anniversary of the cream puff.
That's cool.
And that too stemmed out of tradition. We needed to, back in the day, 95 years ago, they wanted to have a way in which they could showcase agriculture, because we're the agricultural showcase, and they wanted to have a way in which they could do it. So this is how the cream puff, everything about the cream puff is all about dairy, and that's what they did. So we created this dairy delicacy 95 years ago, and people wait all year long for them, and we will sell upwards of 400,000 of them, which is basically, you know, 52 per minute for every hour that we're open for 11 days.
What's really fun is your media team has allowed me, I have to put on all the gear and everything to go into the cream puff place, and we always take pictures and throw it on social media of the experience. It's very cold in there because you're watching the kids, and it's a lot of kids and adults, of course, too, but they're making the cream puffs. That stuff flies out of that little distributor so quickly. I mean, it's like watching the I Love Lucy with the candy factory flying out. I mean, you got to be on your toes to get these cream puffs over to sell. Because, I mean, you know, you move the line very quickly, but when you think about 400,000 in 11 days, I mean, that's quite a bit of food there that you're making.
It's a little theater of the mind for the listeners that perhaps haven't been to the Wisconsin State Fair, or even for those that have. You know, this is, when we're taking them out of the line, you can imagine that they're coming out piping hot. These puffs are coming out piping hot, and then they go into the cooler that you just talked about that was so cold. But the art of actually filling those cream puffs, did my media team allow you to do that? Because you know what? You'd think that it was easy, and it's not easy to fill the cream puffs, because you have to do it so that it's just about perfect, so that that experience of when people take that great bite that they've waited all year long for with the powdered sugar on the top is absolutely awesome.
I look really stupid.
That's what we strive for.
I look really stupid in a hairnet. I'm just going to tell you. I mean, I'm completely bald, and they make me put on the whole gear to do that. But whatever.
I'll make you feel better. I don't know that anyone looks good with a hairnet on.
It's probably true.
Not bald.
Probably true. Probably true. And you've got like scads of new food items. I mean, over 60 new food items this year.
We do 66 to. Just to be exact, it is, it's crazy. I mean, everything from a caramel turtle pretzel to, you know, black pearl seafood avocado boat to blazing jalapeno deep fried olives. I mean, these are things
that
I don't know that you could even know about or even think about, but I mean, for the foodie, for the true foodie, when you think of fair, you think of cotton candy and corn dogs, and that's truly, you know, that's the staple of what we are, and at Wisconsin State Fair, the cream puffs. But we have such innovative concessionaires and food operators that are just constantly doing things that really amaze all of us and certainly all of the visitors, and the delicacies that they create are pretty awesome. So, yes, we have 66 new food items.
Well, and it's microbreweries in Wisconsin. It's also like the Wisconsin cherry growers, the apple growers, the pork association. You know, it's everything that really showcases the state. The ones that I highlighted here that I really like and I'm going to try is the buffalo cheese curds. Because, I mean, cheese curds, I mean, if you're going to the state fair, you got to have some of that. There's an exotic meat grill. They've got bug tacos.
And we've tried them. I did not try them. I would be lying on right to all of the listeners if I said I tried them, because I wouldn't try them. It is, you know, that is for the faint of heart, and you really, truly need to be a foodie on that one. But again, that's the beauty of the individualistic kind of part of what the fair, you know, presents and gives to the fairgoers. But my media person, my Christy Chuckle, who's my communications director,
did you make her?
Did try it. And I think I'll leave you with all of this, that she said they're crunchy and salty.
Okay, all right, fair enough. That's fair enough. But no, I mean, I'm looking at all these other things too. I mean you have such staples there, but you know, Italian paninis, Clemens beer cheese, Polish sausage, pork schnitzel sandwiches. I mean, prime rib sliders. I mean, you eat really well when you come to the park. So very cool on that. And, of course, cool new drinks, too, and the Sprecher freezer and all this other stuff. But tell folks what the Sporkies are.
So the Sporkies, again, back to challenging our concessionaires with just different ideas on how to be innovative. This will be our seventh year of the Sporky, and the Sporky is a spoon and a fork. That's
right,
how it kind of came to be.
Yep.
And they just come up. We had 38 vendors, present different food items. We narrow it down to 8, and we have everything from a brownie waffle stick to the buffalo cheese curds that I think you just talked about, to the chicken dog nachos, to a deep-fried Italian stallion, to a deep-fried milk with cookie dip. And I'll just give you a little sense of one of them with a little bit more elaboration. The brownie waffle stick is located with waffle chicks, which I love.
Wow.
And they actually do have great stuff. But it's a sweet Belgian waffle. It's baked around a double chocolate brownie with white chocolate chips. It's served on a stick. It's dusted with powdered sugar, and it's drizzled with chocolate syrup.
Yeah, that sounds pretty amazing.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah, it does. It does. Oh, no, it absolutely does. That's why I said I just love the food as much as I love the adventure of walking through the park. The big slide, of course, is another thing. It's separate from your kind of amusement area, but the big slide is a big Wisconsin State Fair tradition as well. But there's also musical acts. I mean, so you've got a main stage, and you've got stages all across the fairgrounds.
We do. I mean, certainly our main stage is our stage that, you know, features our national headlining entertainment throughout the course of the 11 days. So we're going to open up with the likes of REO Speedwagon with Night Ranger, the Defense of the Tantrums. We've got a little country with that Brett Eldridge and Old Dominion. Got some comedy with Jeff Dunham. We got some rock and roll. Got some rock and roll with Rick Springfield. some Christian with King and Country, and then they close out with Melissa Etheridge. And the beautiful thing really about our main stage is that our tickets are so ridiculously affordable.
Yeah.
And I think our you know, highest ticket is $59, and that's for Old Dominion, and that includes the price of admission.
Right.
So you can't see a show.
Yeah.
For the listeners who don't know about the Wisconsin State Fair, you're actually watching a concert on the historic Milwaukee Mile. And that is the 1 mile oval. So, I mean, there's just some really nostalgic feeling about that. It's awesome. I mean, there's not a bad seat in the house. But then if you don't want to take in a big show and you just want to, like, catch some entertainment, we have 30 free stages throughout the fair park.
Yeah.
And these stages feature everything from regional entertainment that you might know to local, or, you know, we pull in a lot of Chicago bands in these different stages. So it's awesome when it comes to entertainment. And you don't necessarily think that when you think of a fair, and we are very different. Wisconsin State Fair is different from a lot of other fairs. Not only do we have 30 free stages of entertainment, but we do. We're very proud of our malt beverages, so we feature a lot of areas that have adult beverages, that being a lot of craft beers as well as beer, but also wine, because, again, agriculturally, wine is a big part of the Wisconsin agriculture.
I have to tell you, the REO Speedwagon, I saw them, I believe, in 1979 or 78. That was one of my first concerts I've ever gone to in my life, was at the Wisconsin State Fair. And it was REO.
And isn't it awesome to watch a show at the fair? I mean,
yeah.
It really...
Oh, yeah.
There goes those memories that transcend generations. I mean, right now, that was probably quite a little while back, but it comes back so vibrant and vivid. And that's what we love about the Wisconsin State Fair.
And, of course, there's something for everyone. There's also an amusement park called Spin City. And at Spin City, this is not what you would see at a local county fair type thing. These are really pristine rides that you guys handpick, safe, fun. Tell us a little bit about that.
So unlike a lot of other fairs where they'll have carnivals, right? So a carnival will come in and they have rides and they have games and they operate it. What we do, because we are very, very cautious about our safety, not that the carnivals are not, other carnivals are not safe, I'm not saying that, but we've just taken it upon ourselves to, exactly what you said, we cherry pick the best rides and the best ride operators throughout the entire country to bring in their best rides and their best employees. And that goes for rides and games. So we'll have upwards of 50 plus rides, spectaculars. We'll have the very large swing that you see at a lot of places. It's awesome. We have a big roller coaster, but safety is our first and foremost initiative at the Wisconsin State Fair. And when we have a little bit more control over our inspection process, which is a 17-point inspection process on a daily basis, rides do not open until they are inspected. It's just something that we take a great deal of pride in. Not only do we want them to be safe, but we want them to look really great. We want our operators to really take care of all of our guests so that the experience is awesome from start to finish.
Excellent. And there's also new stuff just for kids that are there, too. It's the 75th birthday of Smokey the Bear.
You know what? We have this great area, and certainly in the 200 acres when it comes to the Wisconsin State Fair, it's very robust. There's a lot going on. As I talked about the 30 free stages, it's vibrant, and there's lots of noise and stimulation, and things are happening at every turn. But then you walk into, it's about 7 acres, and you walk into this area that we call Exploratory Park, and it's an incredible, tranquil oasis where you can just take it down a notch. And in the Exploratory Park is Smokey the Bear's schoolhouse. And for 75 years, Smokey the Bear has been educating kids and families and people of all ages about fire safety. And it's his 75th birthday, so we're going to celebrate it. We're going to celebrate it all 11 days. But on Thursday, August 8th, we're going to have a big birthday party for Smokey and
that's awesome.
Cake and all kinds of stuff.
And there's, of course, places to cool off and decompress, too. You've got the Expo Center, which is always a highlight. I mean, there's just so many things you can get in there as far as it's just a huge marketplace. There's the Wisconsin Products Building. That's where I can get my potato, right? My Wisconsin potato. Am I correct?
Absolutely. The potato growers.
Mm-hmm. The Grand Champion Hall, the Cream Puffs Pavilion. So there's plenty of places to cool off as well. What is admission this year? Because I know it is just so affordable for any family.
If you were to pay the full price, and hopefully the listeners haven't, because we still have some good deals going, and we will have deals during the fair, but it would be $14 for adults. But on Thursday, August 1st, if you come to the Wisconsin State Fair, you will pay only $2 if you bring in two non-perishable food items. On Friday, the Celebrate Wisconsin Day, if you show your out-of-state ID, you can get two adult admission tickets for only $14. Can you believe
that's
that?
Great.
Show your Illinois license, and you're going to get two people in for $14 and have an amazing day, night, the whole thing. And I promise you it will be worth every one of those $14. If you are a military personnel or a veteran, if you come on the last day of the Wisconsin State Fair, which is August 11th, and just show your military ID, you will get in along with your family members for free all day up until 4 p.m. And we also dedicate that entire day to our military and our veterans. So in Central Mall, which is the nerve center right in the middle of the fair park, everything is, there's all different displays from all the branches of the military. And then we dedicate our daily parade to the military on that day as well, which steps off at 2 p.m.
And kids 5 and younger are free.
Kids 5 and younger are free every day.
There you go. So, and for more information on all of this, I mean, the website is just great. You go to WI State Fair, Wisconsin State Fair. .com. I cannot wait because I come out for 2 or 3 days. I have to figure out when that's going to be yet, but always look forward to it. And I always look forward to this tradition of talking to you.
And thank you, David. And it is definitely one of my favorite traditions. And I am from Chicago.
You are.
So I will tell you, yes, you know that. And I love it. And that's where my roots are. Although I've been in Chicago or in Wisconsin for 25 years. I mean, to everyone from Chicago, it is worth the trip. It's not a long drive. We're conveniently located right off the I-94. It's easy. It's breezy. We have ample parking. Come enjoy the day. It doesn't matter your age. It doesn't matter if you have one friend or 10 friends. Everyone will have a wonderful time. Family members, come and just enjoy the day. And I promise you that the Wisconsin State Fair will give you a wonderful experience.
I'll see you there.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathleen. All right, much more ahead on 720 WGN. Formed in 1967, signed in 1971, and fronted by iconic vocalist Kevin Cronin since 1972, REO Speedwagon is a band where the main constant over the decades is a never-ending desire to give their all to their fans year in and year out. REO Speedwagon will be performing live at the Wisconsin State Fair on Thursday, August 1st, and to talk about their journey over the past 5 decades is Kevin Cronin. Good morning, Kev.
Good morning, David.
I love the history. I got to tell you, I love the history of REO because it all started in Champaign with Neil and Alan at the U of I in 67. But most of the band members over the years hailed from Chicagoland.
Well, I do. I mean, I'm a Chicago boy through and through. I was born on the north side, grew up on the south side when I was, 8 years old, when the White Sox won the pennant in 1959. You know, it seems like eons ago, but for me, you know, as a young kid, I was like right there,
sure.
You know, right playing Little League baseball, and I was number 11, Louis Saparicio, man. That was my,
wow.
You know, Oh, yeah. We used to go to the ballpark and, you know, the old Comiskey.
Yeah.
And you know, for any of your listeners who remember the old Comiskey Park, there was a hot dog stand in left field. And it was part of the wall. So when you were in there getting a hot dog, you were kind of your face was like at field level.
Wow.
And we used to, my buddies and I would go out there, and Minnie Minoso played left field for the White Sox.
Oh,
and
yeah.
we'd be out there between innings when he'd come out. We'd like, "Hey, Minnie!" And he and to this day, and it's affected me through my whole music career, because Minnie would always turn around and like, you know, smile at us, or, you know, give us a thumbs up or say hi or something.
What a thrill.
To this day, oh, it was a huge thrill. And so to this day, if I'm, you know, wherever I am, you know, if someone wants to say hi or something like that, I always, even if I'm not in the mood for it, I remember Minnie, and I'm like, hey, if a big leaguer can turn around in the middle of a game and say hello, it's like, okay, I can do that too. So,
it's amazing at a young age how impressionable you are on those things and what you remember for the rest of your life.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, I got a picture of the 59 Go-Go Sox in my wardrobe case. I mean,
that's
it was a
awesome.
Big part of my identity, for sure.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, and you grew up at Brother Rice High School. I mean, you're a true Chicagoan. And, you know, I know you've talked about this before, but, you know, you were taking guitar lessons at some point. I know you said you didn't know exactly why you were taking them. And then in 64, you saw the Beatles play on Sullivan, and everything changed for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I used to walk to my guitar lesson with my guitar case, and there would be, you know, carloads of you know, hoodlums who would just, you know, who wanted to kick somebody's butt. And it's like, there's a kid with a musical instrument. Let's get him. And so I would like be, you know, running, jumping fences, throwing my guitar over the fence to avoid, you know, getting my butt kicked on Friday. Ed Sullivan came out on Sunday. On Monday, those same guys that on Friday were chasing me through the neighborhood mm-hmm. wanted to be in a band with me because they saw that's where the girls they changed from liking the, you know, the cool guys with fancy cars to liking the nerdy guys with guitars overnight.
I bet.
Was an amazing transformation.
I bet. And, you know, I know you were you played guitar for many years, and you were trying to find a guitar player and bass player for your own band, and you started this musicians referral service, helping bands look for musicians, helping musicians look for bands, and you got this call and the opportunity to look for a lead singer for a band called REO. How did that all come about?
Well, it was, the Chicago Sun-Times at that time had a musical want-ad section and classified section, but it cost $15 for each want-ad, and I was looking for a guitar player and a bass player, so they wanted to charge me $30. I couldn't take out one ad for two musicians, and mm-hmm. I was like, I don't have $30, so I got the idea to start this kind of musicians referral service, like you say, and I was getting calls from, you know, and everybody who called was like, oh, we have the greatest band in the world. We're looking for a bass player. And you know, after about a month of this, I'm like, what have I've created a monster here. This is ridiculous. Anybody could tell me anything, right? So I get this call. The guy's telling me, oh, yeah, we have a recording contract with Epic Records.
Right.
You'll get a $200, the guy will get a $200 a week salary. And at the time, I was driving a yellow cab in Chicago, you know,
wow.
Which I kind of dug. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah, but I'm like, so what's the name of this band? And he's like, well, I can't really tell you that because, you know, we're on tour right now. And I'm like, yeah, right, you know. And finally, I'm like, you know, I don't think I can help you. And he goes, all right, well, the name of the band is REO Speedwagon. And I'm like, and I'm thinking to myself, wait, I've heard of those guys. They play the Dex Card Wild Goose Circuit, you know? And I'm like, you know what? I've got a guy in my vast library of lead singers.
Yeah.
I've got this one guy. he sings, he plays guitar, he writes songs.
He's perfect.
You know, it was Gary Richrath on the line. Gary's like, yeah, I want to meet this guy. Well, of course, you know, I'd given myself a stellar review.
That's awesome.
Literally, that's how I got the gig.
You know, that's kind of awesome.
Yeah, it was a scam, basically. I kind of scammed my way into the group, and I've kept up the masquerade for 45 years.
What exactly is an REO Speedwagon? That was a truck company, like a motor company in the early 20th century, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. The REO Speedwagon was a flatbed truck that it was actually originally a fire truck that could, you know, get to the fire quicker than a horse-drawn buggy, and it was kind of prophetic in a way because they were built to last. You know, they were, mm-hmm. They kind of looked cool. You know, so the name kind of stuck with us. So
yeah, perfect.
Here we are, man. Yeah.
There you are.
You know, matter of fact, the logo, you know, the famous wing logo that's on all of our T-shirts and everything, that was basically the hood ornament from the original Aria. And can you imagine now? They gave us, you know, they signed off on it, gave us permission. They never charged us anything to, you know, to use the name, to use the logo. Can you imagine?
Yeah, you'd be lawyered up today.
In this world today. Oh yeah,
that'd be painful.
They welcome us every time we play Lansing. They bring an old Speedwagon out there.
And, wow.
You know, I've ridden around in them, so it's
very cool. Yeah, very cool. And I know, you know, your early days, you know, in the very early days, you were much bigger in some cities like Chicago and specifically St. Louis. You were playing like Busch Stadium one night, but then two nights later, you were playing in a bar in the middle of nowhere. It was kind of all over the board in the very beginning.
It was, but which was kind of cool because, you know, it gave bands a chance to make a name for themselves locally and then build it from there. Whereas, you know, today's world, everything is pretty interconnected. So I would think it's a little more difficult for a young band to get a foothold now than it was back in those days. But hey, you know, it's the modern world, and you know, we all kind of hearken back to the days that you know when we made it or when we did this or we did that. And you know, the fact is, you know, it's today is today, man. You got to embrace what's going on, and I feel just so fortunate that we're still. People are still buying tickets to come and see
us
sing and play those songs. And we don't take ourselves seriously at all, but we do take what we do seriously. And we know that people are coming to see us and they want to see something that's not just a bunch of guys resting on what they did in the past. We take the past and make it the present. And you know, we are out there. Our thing is we want people to we want to exceed people's expectations every night. And that's sure. Somehow we're still able to do it, man. We're still enjoying it, having fun, and
it's fun watching you. Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Now, you talked about a little bit what Minnie Minoso taught you at a young age. And I know when you were touring early, you know, the band wasn't always treated well when you were on the road, depending on who you were touring with. But then you toured with Aerosmith and you said things changed the way you were treated. And it kind of taught you how to treat other bands. And it opened up for you, you know, this level of respect that you had to give, you know, to other people based on what you experienced.
Oh, absolutely! You know, we were the Midwest. We were the perfect opening act for the Midwest because we were really pretty popular, you know, in the Heartland. And so when national touring acts would come to the Midwest, they'd pick up REO, and we would be the special guests on the tour. Mm-hmm. But we were pretty popular, and so some of these bands would see that we were going over really well, and they would basically sabotage us. You know, they'd mess with the sound, you know, turn the lights off on us and stuff, and it was kind of a drag, honestly. But
I don't think so.
But then we toured with Aerosmith, and I'll never forget the first show. Joe Perry walked in the dressing room, introduced himself. They welcomed us into have the after show meal with them and party with them and do the whole thing. And their thing was, I remember Steven Tyler told me that their thing was they wanted us to be as good as possible for the sake of the audience, but it also fired them up that, you know, that we would put the bar at a certain level, and they were so good that they weren't threatened by anybody, but it would inspire them to even play better. And I remember thinking, well, yeah, that's the right, that's
it makes
the
sense.
Right answer there.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we always, you know, we always take the Aerosmith route rather than, you know, not to mention any names of the bands who sabotaged us, but, and I won't, but there gotcha. Were plenty of them.
So all of a sudden you have six albums under your belt. You can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish. Released in 1978, which, you know, received so much FM radio airplay. 2 million copies, ultimately achieving double platinum status. Was that the album that you finally said, wow, you guys are really on your way?
Well, we felt pretty confident with the songs that we had written for that album, so many of the albums that we made before that, we kind of felt like the record company would assign us a producer, but the producer never really kind of got what we did, and so the records would come out not sounding like us, and we would, it was really frustrating for a number of years. And so that album, we went in, and you know, Gary and I went into this meeting with the big wigs at Epic Records, and we're like, you know, we demanded that either we're going to produce this record or we're not going to go in the studio. You know, we thought we were big shots, right?
Yeah.
And then to our surprise, they were like, okay.
Oh, that's
and
great.
We looked at each other and we were like,
did that just happen?
Well, what do we do? we're just a couple of rock musicians.
Yeah.
But, sure enough, we kind of figured it out. And, so, yeah, you can tune a piano, but you can't tune a fish was kind of the first record that we all kind of went, all right, yeah, this kind of sounds like us, you know. So it was, and you know, we had Roll with the Changes,
yeah.
Time for Me to Fly. We had some pretty strong material, so it kind of worked.
Oh, I remember slow dancing to Time for Me to Fly at my seventh grade dance in 1979. It was a big night for me, Kevin. Big night.
Oh, really? All right. Well, good. That's the idea, you know?
You broke into the mainstream again with High Infidelity, sold more than 9 million copies, Keep on Loving You, Take It on the Run, Don't Let Them Go. There was a transformation of the band a bit to a little bit more popular music rather than harder rock. Was the band just evolving at the time, or was this more of a conscious effort to head in that direction?
No, we've never had any conscious efforts in the history of our band. Everything that we've done has pretty much been some sort of a happy accident, and the High Infidelity record was no exception. I'll never forget that. I kind of woke up in the middle of the night and wrote "Keep on Loving You," and if you really pay attention to the lyrics. The verses of that song, it's not a real happy song.
No, and people play it like at weddings and stuff, and I'm thinking to myself sometimes, are you really listening? They were prom themes.
Did you listen to the lyric to the B section of that first verse? But but when I played that for the guys, it was like, you know, no, that's not an REO Speedwagon song. And finally, Rich Rath plugged in, you know, a Les Paul to a Marshall stack and got this nasty sound. And I think that his intention was basically to drown me out in the rehearsal hall. But I was like, dude, that's it. Exactly what this song needed. And so, you know, that's kind of where we kind of stumbled into something, which is what we always, that's all we ever do. We just kind of stumble our way through, and some, you know, people kind of go, yeah, we dig that. And we're like, all right, cool, we'll do it again.
You know, so many bands hailed from Chicago, and you think about, you know, Styx and Cheap Trick, and I'm assuming they were most likely rivals back in the day, but not today. You guys are all kind of pretty close. You tour together, you've recorded some stuff together. Things are a little different today than they were back then.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there was a, you know, it was a friendly competition, but, you know, it was a good competition. It was healthy, and it still is. I mean, we did a gig with Cheap Trick last weekend, and, you know, we were, you know, just really happy for those guys, man, that they got inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I think
which you should be in there as well. I mean, I'm looking forward to that day too, man.
I don't know about that, but those guys for sure, you know, earned it, and they were so they're our buddies. I mean, you know, we love all those. And Styx, I mean, I just heard the other day we've done over 300 shows with Styx.
That's amazing.
And and we're not done. You know, there's talk about going out with them again, sometime soon. And I would love that. I love those guys.
Well, and a few years ago, you did a concert with them to raise money for the affected families of the tornadoes in central Illinois. And that's when Gary joined you guys for Riding the Storm Out. And he passed away last year. And I know that must have been so tough, because I know you had a great relationship over the years. It must have been tough. I mean, he was a founding member. You knew him for a long time.
Yeah. No. His spirit is with us every night. I mean, every song that we play in our set, Gary either wrote, co-produced, played on the records. His stank is all over us, and I've said it before, but it's so true that I learned everything I know about being in a rock band from Gary. I mean, when I joined the band, I was playing the Earl of Old Town in the quiet night in Chicago, I was a folk singer, and to this day, I pretty much channel Gary through, when I first joined the band, I just watched him, and I was like, okay, that's what rock stars are supposed to do, because Gary was... he was the real deal, through and through, and
cool.
We miss him. We miss him every day, and I'm thankful that I got to know him, and that I wouldn't be where I am today. Our band wouldn't be where we are today without Gary Retraff, for sure.
And it's always a pleasure seeing you guys play. It's just, you guys are always rocking it out and sound just as great as you did 35 years ago, and always enjoy it. And Kev, I must have to say, it's time for me to fly.
Time for me to fly.